You're about to close a deal, but you may not want to sign that franchise agreement. We're going to discuss warning signs that a franchisee may not be a good fit. And we even have a little bonus round, how to deal with difficult lawyers when you're trying to close a deal. This is especially the case for startup and emerging franchisors, but also an issue for established and mature franchise brands. The franchisees that you sign and onboard today are going to have a tremendous impact on your franchise system 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now. How they perform, how they validate, the numbers they produce, how that influences your item 19. So franchisee selection, franchisee qualification, we all know is a critical task. But statistically, no matter how good your franchise system is, no matter how good your qualification process is, you're always going to have a conversation about that one, two, or few franchisees that in retrospect, you probably shouldn't have allowed into the franchise system. And maybe they're not bad people, but they're just not a good fit. Maybe they don't work well with other franchisees. Maybe they're causing disruption in your franchise system. Maybe they're never satisfied. And most important, they're not performing well. So what are the warning signs? Well, there's so many. And as you grow your franchise system for your system, you're going to pick up some very unique signals and warning signs indicating not to sign a franchise agreement. But the most important warning sign that I'd like to talk about, one that applies universally to every franchisor and franchise system, is capitalization. And let's add to that franchisee capitalization and connected to that, the franchisee's mindset and financial expectations. So the biggest warning sign that a franchisee may not be a good fit is they don't have the right capital or their expectations are misaligned as to what they should expect out of the franchise system as to income. For example, is the franchisee expecting income replacement? Are they expecting legacy building and ROI? Or are they buying the franchise as a supplemental income type business? So those expectations, capitalization, they need to be aligned. If they're not, it's a tremendous warning sign and an important signal to be listening for. So let's set the foundation here. First, on your end, your accountability. Our accountability is the franchisor. Number one, your item 7, your estimated initial investment, needs to be very candid, very linear, and accurate, right? A lot of franchisors or development professionals believe having the lowest estimated startup cost in your category is an advantage, but it's really not. And your lower number, if you're pushing your estimated investment down to appear more competitive than your competitors, you may be dropping a filter and barrier where you may be taking on franchisees that are not qualified and a good fit for you. Some items to check in your item 7. I think it's critical to start with your reserve capital requirements. In your item 7, every franchisor gives an estimate for reserve capital for the first 3 months of operations. I would examine that extensively and make sure you have enough of a reserve estimate. It's very easy to distinguish your brand if you're speaking to a candidate and they ask why your estimated investment is higher. Well, the answer may be, well, we require a higher reserve capital requirement than our competitors. I mean, that's not a competitive disadvantage. It's an advantage. Number one, because it's showing you're more thoughtful about the process. And two, maybe a franchisee candidate doesn't have the right capital. And so you've done your franchise system a service by filtering them out and not signing them up. Connected with reserve capital, I think you should examine as an opportunity to really evaluate your qualification requirements, your estimated startup marketing. And this applies so much so for startup and emerging brands, which is there's a tendency in item 7s to underestimate or give the minimal estimate for item 7 initial investments. And when I speak with franchisors with some really great, amazing franchise systems, they've had lift and they're growing, selling franchises. A lot of times where we see franchisee dissatisfaction or disconnection is they thought that if they had enough to meet the item 7 estimate and open up, they'd be successful. And a lot of times they're underestimating or don't have enough capital for their marketing budget. And so what happens is that they start the business, they just barely got in. They don't have the reserve capital they should. And they don't understand why their phone's not ringing or the web chat going off and business not scheduling. And it's because they're not marketing, or they're not marketing enough. And what happens next? They're not generating revenue. So they have less funds and they never market. So I would challenge, really examine your item seven estimate for estimated initial marketing expense. You know, recently I had taken a look at two brands in the same exact industry doing the same exact thing. And one had a higher item seven estimate than the other. And when you peeled it back, it wasn't because the franchise, the business was any different or the opportunity any different. What it had to do with is how they went about their reserve capital estimates and how they went about their marketing. The brand that had the higher estimate required the franchisees to prepay an initial marketing budget. I think it was $15,000. Whereas the other one just estimated initial marketing of $1,500 to $3,500. I'd rather go with the franchisor that has that, assuming they're going to use the capital the right way, that $15,000 estimate. And especially if the franchisor is going to collect it up front. Why? Because now we made the threshold higher for the franchise buyer, and we built in that initial marketing so we could get that flywheel spinning, show the franchisee the value of that initial marketing budget, and hopefully get them business and on their pathway. So capitalization, franchisee mindset and expectations. Before you evaluate the franchisee candidate being a good fit, first evaluate your item seven. Now onto your franchisee candidates. And this is also connected to how you're marketing your franchise opportunity. As part of your uniques and your why you, why now, are you positioning your franchise brand as a lifestyle sort of supplemental income business, or are you positioning it as a higher cost income replacement or even legacy building business, right? Franchisee expectations are going to play a critical role. So for example, if you're applying a very aggressive sales strategy of selling multiple territories, high initial franchise fees, well, those franchise buyers are paying those high fees, chances are they're going to expect income replacement versus maybe a mobile single territory business positioned as a supplemental income type business. So understand how you're positioning your franchise offering, whether or not that reconciles with your unit economics, right? Example being, if you're a service-based brand and you sell multiple territories, do multiple territories necessarily align with increased revenue? And they probably do, but is it initially or is it over a certain period of time? So understand how you're positioning your franchise offering. Are we income replacement on this end? Are we lifestyle supplemental income? How that aligns with unit level economics? And now the most important piece to this puzzle, what is your franchisee candidate expecting? So if you're a supplemental income business and your candidate is expecting income replacement, single family income, leaving a job, looking to replace income, well, right out of the gate, that's a red flag and merits a candid conversation, probably declining the franchisee candidate. Or is the candidate someone who comes to you dual income and they're looking to supplement their income, right? So consider, we have two franchisees, A and B, both have the similar locations or franchise businesses, both having the exact same gross sales, exact same margins. Franchisee B may not be satisfied. A may be satisfied. A validates. A is happy. A is a positive influence on your franchise system. B is not. Usually the delta or variable as to why that happened is expectations. Maybe B was undercapitalized and has more financial pressure. Maybe B didn't allocate enough budget for initial marketing and can't generate business. And maybe B expected to replace income right away, whereas A purchased the franchise with the understanding that he or she is going to supplement their income and slowly build up the business. So your biggest red flag needs to revolve around capitalization and franchisee financial mindset and financial expectations, but it's not just on the franchisee. You need to examine how you approach your item seven, what your unit level economics and item 19 support but from a genuine standpoint of, sure, look, if your company-owned outlet's been open for 15 years, your numbers will be good and they're representative. But that's not going to be what a franchisee that's open for 1 year should be expecting. So not that you're going to share information outside your item 19, but evaluate those expectations of the franchise buyer and how you're positioning your franchise offering. And that's the most important red flag to look for. There's other important ones like personality, culture, mindset, but the objective one that should be first on your list or at the top of your list, capitalization requirements, franchisee ability to finance and liquid capital, and combining that with the franchisee financial expectations. So we just talked about when not to sign up a franchisee, but I mentioned a little bonus round here. If you have a great candidate, you're about to close a deal, you're all aligned, culture fits, capitalization fits, it just feels good. And you want to sign them up, but the franchisee has an attorney who's making the deal difficult. And this isn't the fault of the franchisee or the attorney, but it's an important step to be navigated, right? And you have to understand your franchisee candidates, a lot of times they're just reflecting what their attorneys are advising them. And sometimes if you have if they have an attorney that's not experienced in the franchise world, they may come up with unrealistic comments. Like, we shouldn't pay a royalty because we're one of the first franchisees, or our royalties should be lower, or we don't want to contribute to brand development fund. Those are sort of unrealistic requests. Then also you have franchise experienced attorneys who just may be equally aggressive, but more substantive points. So how do you handle it? Well, you recognize that this legal part or this legal negotiation is also part of the onboarding process. Your attorney, he or she, should understand that the goal here is not to have a dispute or challenge the other attorneys or the franchisee candidate. Your attorney should understand how your negotiations take place, how your attorney interacts with the franchisee's attorney and responds to comments is also a reflection of your franchise system and sets the table for your relationship. Now, there are certain modifications or addendums that can be made as to non-substantive issues where you're not going to have disparate treatment among franchisees. My advice, have your attorney be proactive, and you should be proactive. Maintain communication with the franchisee candidate. If your candidate has a list of questions, share them with your attorney. Have your attorney, using your voice, produce a response for you. It should be an education-focused response. It's not, no, we can't do it. It's, no, we can't do this because, for example, our brand development fund is a global fund and we want to treat franchisees equally. And where we can negotiate or offer a compromise, not only explain the compromise we're providing, but be proactive. Prepare the proposed addendum right away so the franchisee's attorney could start reviewing it. Also, attorneys like to play phone tag, so just make sure your attorney is very proactive about the process. My advice, try to minimize phone calls as much as possible, or if you do have them, save it for the end. And before you get there, take an approach with the franchisee candidate and their attorney. We'd be glad to have a conversation. Before we do that, if you could please provide us with a list of your comments so that we could provide a written response, prepare a proposed addendum, and make our conversation more effective. So be proactive, focus on an education-based process, right? It's not about who's right or wrong. A lot of times franchisees, even when they're getting advice from their attorneys, don't understand why the attorney's requesting it and why maybe we can't give that concession to them as a franchisor. So to explain the process. So putting this all together, and this is especially for the emerging brands, your franchisees, their qualification are going to set the table for the acceleration and growth of your franchise system. I have so many conversations with some amazing entrepreneurs, amazing franchisors that are new to franchising and are succeeding at a high level, sold a number of franchises. And the most troubling thing for them is when there's a franchisee that just doesn't fit in. And no matter how much they try to support the franchisee, trying even offering to go at no extra cost on site, additional training, reviewing financials, they just get resistance. And statistically, it's bound to happen. But hopefully this advice helps. And, you know, maybe that franchise agreement you don't sign is part of the catalyst that leads to amazing growth in years 3 to 5.